The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show that's about 2 hours long, and it's the show about everything.
So which is it?
Find out right now.
Here's everything you want in a host,
Eric Metaxas.
Humming. I get nervous when the mic comes on because I realize people are listening. All kinds of people. Close friends, medium friends, enemies. There are all kinds of people listening right now, and I'm just paralyzed. Okay, I'll just get over it. Folks, it's Miracle Monday on the Eric Metaxas Show. I have the particular joy of talking now to three people who've experienced something utterly, gloriously miraculous. People, if you listen to this program and if you've read my book, Miracles, you know that I know that miracles happen. But it's a joy to speak to people who've really experienced something amazing. The book that sums up the story is called The Impossible, The Miraculous Story of a Mother's Faith and Her Child's Resurrection. I have on the line Joyce Smith.
Hi.
Hi, Joyce. And I also have John, your son.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. And your pastor, Jason.
Yes, sir. How are you today?
Okay, so I've got the three principal players in this drama on the line now. Joyce, it seems to me that you ought to tell give the nutshell version of this so the folks listening know what miracle we're talking about.
My son and three of his friends on January the 19th of 2015, we're spending the weekend together and doing what boys do, just having a good time, and they decided to go out onto a frozen lake and slip and slide around as boys do, and it was a warm January day, and the ice had started to melt, and they got out a little bit too far, and the ice underneath them cracked, and they all three fell in. And it went from having a really good time to fighting for their lives in just a split second. One of the young men was able to pull himself out and self-save. And my son and the other young man, Josh Rieger, however, were not so lucky. And they fought frantically trying to help each other get out of the water. And at one point in time, the hypothermia, the cold water that was about 40 degrees, took over, and my son sunk to the bottom of where they were in the lake, and Josh was still above water when the fire department got there and were able to pull him out. They looked for my son. My son, by this time, when they got there, had been underwater probably, about 8 minutes or more. It took them 8 minutes to find him. John was underwater where we can pretty well pinpoint this from the time the 911 calls came in until they pulled him out of the water. He went into the water between 11:27 and 11:32. They pulled him out of the water at 11:51, lifeless and with no heartbeat. And
now, this happened 2 years ago.
Yes.
John, you're on the line, so even if you died, you're able to talk to me on this program. So this is the miracle. This is the miracle. What's the best way to tell this story? First of all, John, you're now 14.
I'm now 17.
I'm sorry. You were 14. That's right.
Yes.
You were 14, so this is more than 2 years ago, 3 years ago almost. But okay, so you were 14 when this happened. So tell me, if you don't mind, from your point of view, What happened from your point of view?
You know, it was the three of us that always hanged out. We've always been together. It was just another time that we went over to Josh Rieger's house, and, you know, it was the constant Xbox gaming and eating pizza, playing Call of Duty, going against the zombies and bots, and, you know, just having a good time playing ping pong. You had a ping pong table down there, and, you know, just having a good time. And but, you know, we got bored, and we decided that...
You said ping pong's not dangerous enough.
Yeah.
How can I age my mother prematurely? I've got an idea. Let's go play on the thin ice. Is that what went through your mind?
We weren't thinking. We went to the park, and there was a merry-go-round, and we were on that. And then we wanted to see who could throw it first. And when we all got headaches, we decided to stop that. And, you know, we noticed that the ice had frozen.
Wait a second. Hold on. As fascinating as the miracle is, did you just say that you and your ding-dong friends that you love and hang out with, that you wanted to throw up?
Yeah, we wanted to see who the first one could throw up with two of us on and one spinning.
I just think that we could do a whole show just about that. We could just do a whole show about 14-year-old boys and
true.
How wonderful and incredibly dumb they are at the same time. Like, it's hard to believe that your goal for fun. I got an idea for fun. Here's my idea. Vomiting. Okay. So that wasn't enough for you. You said throwing up is this, that's a thrill that can only go so far. Let's go play on the thin ice.
We went down to the ice and we noticed that it had frozen. Yes. And if you live in Missouri,
what do you mean you noticed it had frozen? Ice is by definition frozen. You're 17 now. You know that.
Yeah. And it's uncommon here, especially in Missouri. Weather changes dramatically. It gets cold, like really cold, but usually the lakes do not freeze. And we saw that it was frozen, and we wanted to know how thick it was. So,
and I guess you found out.
Yeah, we went over to the rocks and boulders, and we picked up one of the heaviest that only the three of us could carry.
Oh.
And we threw it down on the ice, and it stayed. It didn't go through. It didn't, you know, it just stayed there. And that rock was pretty thick. So obviously we knew that it was a thick layer of ice. And at first, we sat on the dock and we put 2 feet on the ice and we're just moving it back and forward, back and forth. Then we decided to turn around and put our hands on the dock where we could put more weight on the ice. So, you know, our feet were facing the dock and we're just kind of standing on the ice.
Right.
And then finally we figured out that, you know, it's thick enough, let's try and stand on it. And the night before is when the picture of the three of us, that was where it took place. We had fun. We were listening to music. You know, we wanted to see who could get closest to the edge.
Yeah.
We were jumping up and down, sliding like a penguin.
And you're probably thinking, hey, what's the worst that could happen? I could die and destroy my parents' lives. What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, we weren't exactly thinking of that. And, you know, we went back after that night, we went back to the house and, you know, we finished. We had, you know, more good times. We ate and more video games. But the next day it got significantly warmer. It was about, I think it was in the 70s. But this time was a little different. We took Josh Rieger's sister, Jamie, with us. She wanted to see, you know, what was going on and, you know, hang out with us. We were all very close. And we take her out there. She didn't want to get on the ice. And now that I look back on it, I frankly don't blame her. But the three of us were... just continuing doing what we were doing. And if you know me and my three brothers, when we get a phone call, you know, we walk and talk. And that's just something that I've taken from the three of them. When I'm on the phone, I have to do something. I can't be sitting still. And Mom called, and she asked me if I wanted to go to the Recplex. And if you know me personally, I love the game of basketball. It's been a part of my life since I was born. It's something me and my dad have always shared. Something that I always wanted to strive for and be great at. And she asked me that, and of course I said yes, and my first comment back, well, is my dad going? And, you know, and we had a normal conversation about pickup, departure, arrival, stuff
right,
like that.
Right.
And finally, like I finish every phone call with any family member now, she said, I love you. And I said, I love you too, Mom. And as I hung up the phone, seconds later, the ice broke. me and Josh Rieger fell in. We were about 25 to 50 feet out.
So you're walking and talking on the thin ice.
Yes.
It's so funny, John. If you had called me, I could have told you, don't do that. We got to go to a break. Folks, I'm talking to some people who've experienced an extraordinary miracle of God. We'll be right back.
Well, my daddy left home when I was 3, and he didn't leave much to Ma and me, just this old guitar and an empty bottle of booze. Now, I don't blame him because he run and hid, but the meanest thing that he ever did was before he left, he went and named me Sue.
Hey there, folks. I got to tell you, it's Miracle Monday, and we're talking to three people who've experienced one of the big miracles. It's called Resurrection from the Dead. If you've ever experienced that, you know it's a pretty big deal. The book is titled The Impossible, The Miraculous Story of a Mother's Faith and Her Child's Resurrection. The mother is Joyce, who's on the line. Her son, John, who is 17, is on the line, and their pastor, Jason, is on the line. John, we were just going through how this all happened. So what goes through your mind the moment the ice cracks? Besides, uh-oh.
The best way I can put it is, and you know, everyone's been to a movie theater, I think, and everyone, you know, sees, you know, the Marvel or the DC comics, and you see the disaster happen, but you never think in a million years that that's going to be you.
Right.
So when the three of us fell, it was instantly going, oh my gosh, this could be it. One of my words that I chose to say was call 911. I don't want to die. Call 911.
Now, did you say that? Because who heard you say that?
Jamie Rieger.
Okay, so but my question is that there are various ways you can go through the ice. You know, you can go through the ice and disappear, and you're never heard from again. Or you can go through the ice, and you're still your head is above water, and you're yelling at people, and they can see you, and you're struggling. It sounds like that's what happened to you.
Yes, the ice was thin where we were. Yes, but the ice was still staying together. And as we fell, the two of us, I was pushing ice up for Josh Rieger so he could stay afloat. Meanwhile, while we are fighting for our lives, Josh Sander, thank God, he self-rescued himself.
How deep was the water where you were?
Mom,
about 10 feet. It was about 10 to 12 feet deep.
Okay, I'm assuming you're not that tall.
No, I'm barely 5 foot.
Okay, so basically, you go under the ice. Do you come up out of the ice, or do you, in other words, I'm just trying to understand. You were able to shout to your friend. When you say you were fighting for your life, my point is, what does that mean? That you were trying to crawl back up onto the ice?
Like I said, me and Josh Rieger were out about 25 to 50 feet out. The ice had cracked. The two of us fell in. Myself. I was trying to push ice up for Josh Rieger to stay afloat. It was, like you said, it was breaking. It wasn't like just one hole and we couldn't get back up. The ice was breaking around us. So every time we tried to grab onto ice, it would continuously breaking.
Right.
And one key thing that Josh Rieger told me after all this was over, he said, I was expecting you to come up, but you never did. And the paramedics eventually, Josh Rieger stayed afloat long enough that they got him, and then they were coming to search for me.
Well, I'm sure all the gory details are in the book. So you go under. What people never think about is that when you go in water that cold, that's as bad as anything. In other words, anybody who's been in water approaching 40 degrees understands that that is as bad as anything. You want to get out of there. That your body is not designed to be able to withstand that. So you obviously just went numb and went to the bottom, I guess. Is that, do you remember what happened the moment you lost consciousness?
The best way I can put it as in one of the news out here did a shot where they took a camera and they had it above surface on the dock, and then they stuck it underwater, and that moment when you can see, your eyes are open and you can see under the water, then above the water, That's the really the last thing I remember. It was really like the movies, you know, accident, blackout, eyes slowly waking up, you know, bits and pieces throughout the story, and then finally, I'm in the hospital room.
Okay. Well, maybe we go to your mom here. Joyce, you, when did you find out what had happened?
I had talked to John and hung up with him around 11:27. I was expecting another telephone call because Josh Rieger's mom, Cindy, was going to call me to tell us where we pick up, you know, the switched kids. And so the phone rang about 11:52. Again, they'd pulled John out of the water at 11:51. And so when I answered the phone, you know, I was expecting this call, and she said, hi. I could tell by her voice that something was wrong, and I said, are you guys okay? And she said, no, we've had an accident. I said, do you have a car accident? She said, no. She said, the boys were out on the ice. They fell through, and they've just pulled John out of the water, and he doesn't have a heartbeat.
Just what every mother wants to hear.
Yes, just that call.
An absolute nightmare. Lord have mercy.
And, you know, you're trying to take in what's, you know, and consume what's just been spoken to you, and your mind just goes into shock, and you're trying to pull your thoughts together, you know, what you're going to do. And I was frantically running around the house trying to remember where I'd put my purse to get my keys because Cindy told me they wanted me to come to the lake. And so, you know, I want to tell you that I would love to tell you that I was in perfect control and knew exactly what I was going to do, but I don't even remember how I got, well, other than I was driving the car, but to tell you that I could tell you what was going on during that time with traffic around me.
But I don't understand, why wouldn't they hustle John to the hospital? Why go to the lake?
They were working, going to pull him up, and they were going to do CPR and so forth on the, you know, at the scene. And they even had used a new medical thing where they go ahead and intubate the victim on shore, which, you know, is a new thing for them. In fact, they did an article for EMT on this because John was one of the first they'd ever tried this on, to try, you know, to life, quicker life-saving
right.
procedures.
Right.
And so they were working on him there, but his body, when they pulled him out, he had icicles on his hair and his face and his nostrils. I mean, from them pulling them out, you know, and him from being underwater, and his body was cold, and it was body was gray, and there was no life in it. I mean,
now to have no heartbeat and to have been underwater for 15 minutes,
yes,
icy water. Was it the judgment of the folks at the scene that John is dead?
Yes. Yes.
And did they have, but nonetheless, they had some hope. In other words, why would you intubate a corpse?
They were trying everything they could to save John. And I say this is a God thing, because it was days before that they had decided that they'd gotten new ice rescue equipment, and that they would go out, and in the same area where John and the boys went down, they practice cold water retrieval. And so, you know, it was like God was just positioning, you know, and had set things in motion. And
But of course, you realize there are people listening to this program thinking, hey, if God is so great to do that, why couldn't he just, you know, help John to understand it's not wise to walk on the ice when the ice is thin and it's 70 degrees out. You know what I'm saying? In other words, when people try to understand how God works and these miracles, it's just, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. It's still, it's just so amazing and hard to believe that these things happen.
It is. And you know, here's the one thing to address your question. You know, God gave us a free will, and he doesn't go against our free will. It's the reason we get ourselves in trouble that we do. You know what I'm saying?
I guess I am.
It's just
that's how it is, and kids will do stupid things. I know I did. It's amazing. You know, I look at it this way. It's God protective hand that I'm still here today at 67, you know, is because of some of the stupid things I chose to do, you know. And, you know, boys don't always think things out. I have four boys, and I can verify that. They don't always think through the things they think are fun. But, you know.
Do they all think vomiting is fun? Or is that just John?
I think that might be just John.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure. I think boys think that's kind of fun. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. So what happens at the lake there? You go there. You see your son in this condition?
No, I don't make it to the lake because they make the decision there that they're going to go ahead. They're not getting anything. They can't get the little sticker things, you know, to monitor his heart, to stick on his body because his body's so cold. His core temperature at this time is 88 degrees. And so they are going to go ahead and rush him to the hospital, which was about 5 minutes away from the lake.
Yeah.
And so I got another call from Cindy saying, don't go to the lake. Meet me at the hospital. And so I'm yelling and screaming at traffic because they're in my way and I can't get by, and I'm trying to call my husband to tell him what's happened. I can't get a hold of him. I can't get my sister. I can't get my brother-in-law. I mean, everyone I call, nothing. And I'm just nuts at this point in time. And I thought to myself, oh, dear Lord, they're going to pull me over the side of the road because I'm on the phone and driving at the same time. And I thought, well, I don't care. The police will get me there.
Hey, I would say they could all go to heck. Your son has just died. We're going to go to break to a break here. Folks, when we come back, we're talking to Joyce Smith and her son, John. The book is The Impossible, The Miraculous Story of a Mother's Faith and Her Child's Resurrection. Folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. It's Miracle Monday. We're talking to Joyce Smith, whose son drowned and was miraculously brought back to life. We're talking to the son who drowned and came back to life. And we're going to talk to their pastor, who's also on the line, Jason. Now, Joyce, you were just describing you're trying to get to the hospital. Finally get to the hospital. What happens?
I get to the hospital. Of course, there's not a parking place in the place to be found. And thank goodness Cindy came out and saved the older couple that I was yelling and screaming at them to get their car out of the parking place that they were taking forever to do. And she parked my car for me, and I went in. And
don't you hate those old people? Man, they tick me off. Go ahead. It's like, come on, you've been in that car for 2 minutes.
Yeah. I asked if Jesus was going to come back before they got out, but anyway.
You know what? That's how you know that we're living in a broken world and we need a Savior. Everything is messed up. People can't even back out of a parking space.
Exactly.
With any kind of sense of speed.
That's right.
If it's not one thing, it's another. Okay, yes. So you finally get into the hospital.
I get into the hospital, and I think they're going to let me go right back, but they didn't. They put me in to a little site ante room, and it was very small, and a little nun came in and sat down with me. She was a sweetheart, and she didn't really say anything to me. She just got a hold of my hand, and she started praying with me. And so it wasn't long before they called me back to where John was, and I did not realize that they were going to call time of death before I got there, but when they heard that I was coming, they held off. And so they were going to let me come back, let them watch them do CPR for a couple moments, and then they were going to go ahead and call time of death.
Now, okay, I've never heard that before, call time of death. In other words, that they finally make the decision and they say he was pronounced dead at this time.
Yes.
Okay, but so they're fully expecting to do that. They're just for the heck of it, they're going to do a little more CPR. They're going to let you be there. But they're expecting now that this is the story.
Yes, and we had found that out from Alex Giddens. Well, we knew it, too, from Dr. Sutter had written a letter a little while after that talking about this. And so I'm in there, and I'm watching them do this, and Dr. Sutter who, by the way, just his daughter happened to be in John's class at school. At that time, we didn't even know that. And he wasn't even supposed to be in there with John because he wasn't a pediatric doctor. But when John came in and they saw that he was, you know, had a post-pubescent body size, that they were going to call in another doctor, and so they called Dr. Sutterer in.
I've got the same kind of body size. I've been post-pubescent for a long time. Okay, so now where do you come in, Pastor Jason? Have you arrived at the hospital?
I have not. I'm kind of waiting, standing by to hear what was going to happen because we kind of got a report that, John went under. You know, I will throw one thing in. One of the things that they say is that they're not dead until they're warm and dead. So they always try to raise the body temperature before they call time of death. That's why
they're not dead till they're warm and dead.
Correct.
Yes.
So
I've never heard that before, and I would have liked to live my life without having heard that.
Yep.
That's just one of those.
That's why they worked so much on him, was they were trying to get his temperature up.
Oh,
yeah, his body temperature.
Gosh. Okay.
From 88 to 96.
Okay. So Joyce, at what point does this thing happen where you go into the room and I mean, I can't imagine as a dad with an 18-year-old. I mean, the idea of going into a room and confronting this, it's the unthinkable.
Well, here was my mindset. I had begged God all the way to the hospital that he please not take my son. I mean, that he was, first of all, we prayed for him for 17 years that we could get a child, and now we have him, and he's 14, and, you know, I'm begging God, please do not take him away from me and from our family. So I'm going on in there with a mindset that God's not going to do this, that somehow, some way, he's going to work this out. So them calling time of death, none of that is anywhere on my radar, okay? I don't care if he hasn't had a heartbeat for 2 days. That isn't something.
So you believe in the miraculous. You believe in the miraculous.
Yes. And so when I went in there and they told me that I could, Dr. Sutter came over and said, you can go up and talk to John. I was like, well, that's strange, you know, why are they wanting me to talk to him? But I thought, okay, fine. I got up, went into the end of the table, and the minute that I touched his feet and I could feel how cold they were and how gray they were, I knew at that point in time, okay, this is it. This is when the rubber meets the road. And so I just thought, all right, I've heard this my whole entire life, the Holy Spirit that raised Christ Jesus from the dead. And I thought, God is either who he says he is or he's not. And so I just started praying, and it wasn't a long prayer. I was told that I was praying very loudly. I don't remember it that way, but apparently everyone in the ER room heard me, and the whole, you know, ward there, not just the room where we were, that I raised my voice and I said, please, Holy Spirit, come and give me back my son. And within moments of that prayer, after they had been doing CPR and, you know, on him for 27 minutes, and all of a sudden, the charge nurse, Alex, she starts saying, I've got a pulse. I've got a pulse. I've got a pulse. She's stunned because she was the one that was telling Dr. Sutter, hey, you know, we've done everything we know to do. What are we going to do from here, you know? And he told her he was going to give her 5 more minutes, and then they were calling time of death.
Folks, we're talking to the people involved in a miracle. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. Stick around. Folks, this is the Eric Metaxas Show. It's Miracle Monday. We're talking about a miracle, and I mean a miracle, resurrection from the dead. Is there any other kind of resurrection? Not that I know of. We're talking to Joyce Smith, who is the mother to her son, John, who died, and to their pastor, Jason. This is such a story. Joyce, so suddenly God answers your prayer, and you hear them say there's a heartbeat. I mean, what happened in the room at that point? Are people appropriately stunned?
Yes, and they frantically start working on him. And people, they can't believe, you know, what's happening. And we hear this post the story, you know, post this day, that they can't, to this day, even Dr. Sutter, who is a believer, you know, and all this, he still cannot get his scientific doctor's mind around the fact of everything that happened to John, that he should not be alive. And he still gives John these little doctor's exams in the hallway at school when he sees him. Okay, are you having this, or you've had this problem? He just can't fathom how, what happened.
Okay, well, tell us about this, because this is the thing a lot of us don't understand. If somebody is underwater for 15 or 20 minutes, and then for an hour there's no heartbeat, that's death. They're dead.
Yes.
So what does the doctor say? I mean, anybody would assume there's going to be brain damage, that if you don't have oxygen in your brain, your heart has stopped for this long, it's game over. So what is the explanation?
Well, they don't have an explanation, and that's just it. To this day, they don't have an explanation. I mean, Dr. Sutter wrote in his letter that he sent out after this whole situation that he thought that he was going to put John on a helicopter to be medevaced to another hospital, only to lay in an ICU room and die. I mean, to me, when I saw that John had his heartbeat, to me, God had healed him and the work was done. And the doctors just need to get caught up with where things were going here. But that was not their thinking. And when we get to Cardinal Glennon, and again,
Wait. When you get to Cardinal Glennon, you're talking about another hospital?
Yes, they airlift John to another hospital because they were not equipped to take care of him there. They moved him to a children's hospital downtown St. Louis. And so it just so happened that day that the area expert on hypothermia and drowning was the doctor that would come in and work with John and evaluate him. His name was Jeremy Garrett, Dr. Jeremy Garrett. And so he calls us into the room after they've got John there and looked at him, and he starts telling us, you know, all the things that, reasons why John, you know, should not be alive. And his comment was, I have good news and I have bad news. What do you want to hear first? And I said, I'm a bottom line girl. Let's hear the bad news. And he said, well, your son has no brain activity. What he does have is brainstem function, which is very rudimentary, where he'll take a breath every now and again, but nothing that's going to sustain life. He's in multiple catastrophic organ failure.
Okay, now how many hours after the accident is this that you're hearing this?
This is probably around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so we're about 3 hours after the accident.
Okay, so at this point, the doctor's saying there's nothing here. There's a heartbeat, but basically, your son is not going to come back.
Right, that he has no brain function other than, you know, this thing that's making him breathe occasionally, but it isn't going to be anything. It's the last thing the body does before it just totally dies. And that even if he did, you know, come out of this, because he's been without oxygen for that long, that he would basically be a vegetable. He would not be able to function ever again.
Well, I'm amazed. We're running out of time, so we probably got to fast forward here. So what happens after this?
After this, I walked out, and I was mad because what he said. And there were several pastors in the room, and we walked, asked them to walk back in the back and start praying for John.
Now, Pastor Jason, you weren't at this hospital.
I was there at that point.
You were
at
there.
At that point, I showed up. I walked in right as Joyce was walking out from the conversation.
So why don't I give you a chance here, because we've got you here. So what happens at this point?
So Joyce says, hey, this is what we heard. He's brain dead, and I need you to go in and pray. We're not accepting anything but life. And at that point, I agreed. No death. The power of life and death in the tongue. And we started speaking life. We went back and began to pray for John. When I walked in the room, he was on a respirator completely. I mean, he was gone. The doctors didn't think he was going to make it 24 hours. And so we just started praying. We said, Lord, we just pray the breath. You know, we knew it was his lungs and his brain. And we knew that that's where the miracle needed to happen. We started just praying. We prayed the breath of God into his lungs. And I turned around and saw two angels in the room. And that.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Yep. You saw two angels in the room.
Yep. And they were as big as the room, from ceiling to floor. There were two angels that I had saw in a room 3 years earlier when I was praying for a lady in Port Angeles, Washington, who was on her deathbed. And we prayed for her. She gave her life to the Lord. She squeezed my hand, totally comatose, and had about 15 minutes to live. I turned around and saw the two angels in the room. And within 15 minutes, she was wide awake and walked out of the hospital.
So you guys traffic in this crazy stuff. I do, too. But yeah. A lot of people listening are like, what? You're praying for the dead angels? These people are nuts. You are the kind of nuts that I want to hang out with. So tell me more, because we just got like a minute left in this segment.
Yeah, I'm going to be quick.
Go ahead.
So we prayed, saw the angels in the room. All of a sudden, John breathes over the respirator, opens his eyes, and he looks at me. And I go, oh, man, God's doing something. And so then we begin to pray for his brain. Lord, put his brain back together again. And over his head, I saw just a million colors. You could feel the presence of God in the room. And it was like God was knitting his brain back together again. It was like that's the best way to explain it. And after we finished praying, he woke up again and came off the mat. I mean, his shoulders came off the bed.
To me, I'm looking for the moment when he says, Mommy, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Did we get that yet? Or maybe we can get that on this program.
Right.
Huh? Where do you say, Mommy, I'm sorry, I'm such an idiot, you don't deserve a son like me? And then you say, well, all right, but I'm your mother, I love you. I cannot get over this. Is such a story. I'm so glad to have you guys. And we'll have one more segment, short segment. Folks, we're talking about a miracle. The book is called The Impossible, The Miraculous Story of a Mother's Faith and Her Child's Resurrection. You want to talk about the power of prayer? If you've listened to this, you understand this didn't just happen. This was prayer. We'll be right back.
I did on my own, alone again, naturally.
Couple of minutes left with Joyce Smith and her pastor, Jason, and her son, John. What a miracle. You guys, what church, Jason, do you pastor? What's the name of it? Where is it?
It's First Assembly Church in St. Peter's, Missouri.
St. Peter's, Missouri. I'm just thinking of all the people listening who don't go to churches where the pastors believe the way you do. And I'm thinking, why would they ever want to go to a church where you can't? I mean, when I hear this kind of stuff, I just want to be around this kind of faith, because if you and Joyce, and if you didn't have this kind of crazy faith that you really know that God is who he says he is, you know that. You don't kind of weakly hope it. You know it, and you pray, and then you get this kind of insane result. It's just mind-blowing.
God showed up. I mean, 14 days later, he walks out of the hospital. I mean, you know, and it wasn't done just then. I mean, it was a process. We call it a tapestry of miracles, where we literally believed. And it's interesting because every day we went, the nurses would give us a list of prayer requests for John. And by the end of the day, God had answered every one of those prayer requests.
Now, what do the doctors say? I mean, clearly they do not expect this kind of result.
Bona fide miracle. Every one of them has said that on tape.
They've said that on tape.
They've looked for 2 years to find someone like John around the world. And they found one lady that was kind of close, but no one else. This is the only miracle like it. Because they're trying to replicate it. They're trying to say, hey, if it worked for him, man, what can we do for other people who run into this situation?
Yeah, I got an idea. Pray in the name of Jesus.
There you go.
Hey, I got a medical suggestion. Pray in the power of the Holy Spirit. Just a suggestion.
Right.
This is so funny and amazing and delightful. Now, John, you understand that since you've been resurrected from the dead, I don't want you to feel any pressure that you have to do anything amazing with your life, right? I don't want you to feel any pressure. Just keep playing Xbox and vomiting on the merry-go-rounds and stuff. Just do whatever you feel like doing.
Yeah. Just
live
day by day.
Listen, all of us, we ought to have the same sense of wonder that anybody like you would, that just the fact that we get to be here on this planet and that God would allow us to do anything, it's just extraordinary. But we just got like a minute left. How do we sum up? What do we say here? This is amazing.
I want to throw one thing in. John knows his purpose. God has called him, and in this process of the last couple of years, he's really, that has become apparent to him that God has called him for something great.
Well, look, just telling this story, God is in the business of doing miracles. Why? He doesn't have to. He does this to draw people to himself. Period. Yep. Case closed. People need to hear this story. It's why I wanted to get you guys on the program. People need to know this God is real. Yep. Jesus is real. The resurrection power of God is real. Just because it doesn't happen all the time doesn't mean it never happens. And if you hadn't had the faith to pray like maniacs, you know, you just say, well, it's sad, and you walk away. A lot of people would do that. You didn't.
And he would have died.
Unbelievable. I didn't expect this to be as much fun as it was. John, thanks for letting me make fun of you.
No problem.
I'm telling you, when I always say to my daughter, if you ever do anything that's stupid, I'll kill you. I'll kill you because I love you. I will kill you if you do anything that's stupid. I mean, this is just what a joyous, joyous story. I want to thank all three of you for being my guests. We're out of time. I know you've been doing tons of media on this. I'm just really glad that you did this show. Thanks to Rogers and Cowan, your publicity folks. I love stories like this. I know my audience loves stories like this. To all three of you, thank you.
Thank you.
Folks, the book is The Impossible. Joyce Smith is the author. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Send this to your friends.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.